हरि
सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
So now we go to the method of presentation. The so then, here's then pointing out, the author has said that the traditional method of teaching or presentation is based on the science of anvikshiki. The science of anvikshiki has two primary divisions, which are atmavidya and hetu vidya. Atmavidya describes a transcendental philosophy, the fundamental principles of which are samanda, relationship, abhideya, process, and prayojana, result. These three will expand into the dasa mool, the 10 essential tenets of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. Hetu vidya teaches the logical skills fundamental for understanding and preaching Vaishnava philosophy. The main emphasis is stressed on the Panchanga Nyaya. It can be safely said that the Panchanga Nyaya is the essence of logic. It is because Vedanta Sutra is the essence of Vedic literatures, including Nyaya Shastra, and it formulates itself using Panchanga Nyaya. Therefore, it can be concluded that it is the essence of Nyaya. So in other words, in Anvikshiki, you have these two parts. It's basically a combination of philosophy and logic. So your Atmavidya means it is the fundamentals by which the philosophy works, while then the Hetu Vidya means the fundamentals on which presentation works. Presentation, understanding, study, all these different things. Does that make sense? So that combination, if you know how philosophy works and you know how to analyze it and present it, then your philosophy is very strong. Right? Otherwise, one knows the philosophy, but if one doesn't understand the fundamentals it's based on, sometimes one may, may be sometimes inconsistent in one's presentation, right, or understanding. So something might be more technical, something less technical, or something is you're basing it on devotion, something else will be maybe influenced by moksha, something else by dharma, art, or kama, and you can't actually see the connection. Then your Hetu Vidya will have a method for how you can present it, right? It means you always have anyone who's educated in a certain, system of communication, then there's always some method that they present, right? You know, the famous, you know, who, what, where, why, how, you know, when, you know, all that kind of thing, that's one thing, or they have so many different, like, formulas that they use. So the Hetu Vidya means, what are the Vedic formulas that would be used by the acharyas? Like that. So they're quite good. People are still reading their books after thousands of years. You know, it's still going on. There has been no rewriting of Bhagavad Gita. It wasn't needed a new thing, you know. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's still as it was originally written. So it works. So now it's just a matter of understanding that. So now we'll go forward and to look at this. In his commentaries on Vedanta Sutra, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan writes this system to present the subtle tenets of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy. The Panchanga Nyaya is known as Prararta Anuman, or the logical evidence presented for the benefit of others. That is where the greatness of the system is to be found. So Prararta means it's a method that is being done for the benefit of others. That is the aspect of it. If you're studying for yourself, actually there's another thing that will start. I mean, it depends on when we finish this, the next lesson will be what's called the Tatparya Lingas. And that's six elements. Remember before it mentioned the four, the four means the anubandha chatushtaya, means what is the subject matter, how it's who is authorized to study it, what is the matter itself, and what goal you'll get or result you'll get from studying it. So that's four. So that must be there in the introduction, so the book has to actually be based on it. It must be something practically applicable to the person who's qualified to study and use it. Right? Then the five then is this method of presentation. And then the six is the method of understanding. Right? That makes sense. So we end up all these, the one, the two, the means for us it's just it's normally just puts it into the thing. We don't use a mystic spin on it. You know, like that. You know, the Zen and stuff, there's the one. And that becomes the two, which becomes the five, which becomes the 10,000. Right? You know, like that. So we have the same thing. I mean, in other words, they're using our thing, they just have to mystify it a bit, because when you get to the end of it, there's nothing. So you got to make getting there look a little interesting. You know, for us, where you go, that's more interesting than, you know, here that we're trying to get it. Does that make sense? So there's no need of mystique. Vedic culture is known for its respect for one's individuality and faith. Furthermore, it is capable to bring one to a higher position without unnecessarily destroying one's present faith and vision, and thus avoids pushing the individual back to point zero. This is the progressive nature of Vedic culture and thought, which fully supports the evolution of the consciousness of the living entity. In other words, what state of mind the living entity is in right now, that's the state of mind that the Vedic culture deals with. Then you have to have a practical path how to get yourself from there to where you want to be. Does that make sense? So this is not necessarily well known like that. But this is actually Vedic. If you hearing this, if we had changed this to modern... The modern understanding is known for its respect to one's individuality and faith. You go, yes, that's it. But we say the Vedic culture is known for its respect for one's individuality and faith. It's kind of like, that's the first time I heard that. Because, you know, maybe it's the first time someone's presenting, you know, the Vedic culture as Prabhupada's talking about it. Does that make sense? Like that, because the point is that self-realization means you start with the individual. Self means the individual. So how the individual from his position becomes self-realized, right? So it's just another presentation, means another usage of the words. That's all. The absolute truth is eternal, which means that it has no past or future and is all-pervading. It is therefore understood that not past or future but present is the best way to find it. It means the absolute truth is found now, not in the past or in the future. You can use it, but the best is what's going on right now, because that's what's dynamically going to connect you. You can look at the past to find, you know, go back and learn something from what's been what's happened, because the past was the present at that time. Right? Does that make sense? So you can learn from it. The individual's subjective reality is found in his present state of consciousness. Since the absolute is all-pervading, it is also possible to find it in the individual's subjective reality. Right? This idea that is has to be objective, but the objectivity is its connection to the Supreme Lord. That's objective. Anything else is subjective. So since you're trying to get the individual to the absolute platform, then you must start with the individual subjective viewpoint and then progress that to the ultimate objective reality. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Right? Yeah? So you have to consider the individual, but this is not sentimental. It's considering it in the light of the objective. Right? There's not a problem with subjectivity if it's seen in the light of objectivity. Right? And the only real objective person is Krishna, right? Because he is everything, so therefore that works. Does that make sense? Or his devotees who are focused on him, so it's the same thing. Does that make sense? Yeah. The system of Panchanga Nyaya takes into account individual's present state of consciousness and assists him in finding the objectivity or the absolute truth in the present. And that is where it can be found. Okay. When the individual gets in touch with that absolute truth, it is very easy and natural to progress further and become free from all the subjective views and concepts. The Panchanga Nyaya facilitates this using five angas, or limbs. That's why it's called Panchanga, five angas. So now it's a quote from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he shows the proper mentality. It means what we've just described, now Bhaktivinoda Thakur is going to discuss. This is from his work called the Bhagavad. The student is to read the facts with a view to create, and not with the object of fruitless retention. Right? In other words, what knowledge you learn, you have to do something with it. Just to know it's not enough. Students, like satellites, should reflect whatever light they receive from authors, and not imprison the facts and thoughts, just as the magistrates imprison the convicts in the jail. Right? So it's something that you get, you reflect that to others. We even see in the song, in Sri Rupa Manjari Pada, it's mentioned that the light, the qualities of Srila Rupa Goswami then are being reflected in our heart and then reflect back. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is you're dealing with iron and fire. Iron is not fire, it reflects fire. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's what's pleasing. The sun is fire, the moon is reflecting that. It's pleasing. Does that make sense? So this element of reflection is important, because that means the qualities actually are coming from somewhere else, and we're reflecting those. Right? So Krishna has, his internal potency has, then others are reflecting that till it gets to us, and we're reflecting what they have. Does that make sense? So, yeah, so that thought must be reflected and used like that. We don't say it's ours. It's being reflected, but it's that it must be a practical reflection. Right? Otherwise, if it's not a practical reflection, you get the glimmering, what does he call it? How does the Prabhupada uses it? Glittering reflection in the darkness. Because it's a reflection of the spiritual world, it's Brahman. But it's in ignorance, it's in darkness. So it appears that there's something happening, but nothing's going on, it's dead matter. So shimmering, but Prabhupada uses it a lot. There's a term that he means that you can see it if you ever have the opportunity, is at when the sun is straight up and you have some water that is there that's in that light, bend over the water so you can't see the sun and look at your reflection. Then you'll see what he's talking about. Because around your reflection there'll be this halo. But then the reflection itself is more dark because of that. So the ignorance is deeper, but there's that shimmer around, so it gives it that something, that something's going on. So that's what's here. There's some idea that something's happening, but there's nothing happening. It's dead matter. So this is non-reflective. Right? So it's mundane to have something and do nothing with it. Spiritual means it's alive, it's happening. Right? So that's the nature of the living entity. Thought is progressive. The author's thought must have progress in the reader in the shape of correction or development. He is the best critic who can show the further development of an old thought. Right? So in other words, if someone has a thought that's not right, you can take that and take it forward. That's a real critic. So sometimes there's always a question on constructive criticism. Because everybody criticizes, and if you say why you're criticizing, they'll always say it's constructive.
But here Bhaktivinoda Thakur is giving the definition of constructive. It means it takes what they have and takes it forward. Right? Then he'll give a definition of what generally is used as criticism. But a mere denouncer is the enemy of progress and consequently of nature. And he uses a capital N. So that means the nature that Krishna gives, yes. But recognizing our relationships simply means I know I am the servant of Krishna. It doesn't mean you have to know your Swarup.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Means the point is there means that reflection is there because Radha and Krishna, they are interacting. Everyone else is assisting now. Rupa Goswami mentions the nectar devotion that there's only one devotee and that's Radharani. Everyone else is her devotee. Like that. I forget what work it is, but there's one of the works of the Acharyas where all the different residents of Vrindavan come forward and mention their position in that. You know, so then even those who appear to be inimical to Radharani and Krishna, or rivals or obstacles, they come forward and say, actually, we're great devotees of Radha and Krishna. Seeing them together is our happiest, you know, moment. But to bring out the taste of that moment, there has to be an obstacle. So that's our service, is to create those obstacles. So they're so. That's why they're so expert at finding when Radha and Krishna are together, just so they can break it up. So it makes it more taste to get together. You know.
So by the purification, the usefulness, being in return,
the
service, then you just become more aware of the reflection.
Yes.
So always just Krishna and Radha.
And the devotees means we were reflecting the devotees. We're not there's already someone reflecting above us.
Yeah.
It's like
what I mean is I don't see it. I'm not saying it's the lesser position to be the reflector. So in the sense of, you know,
but the thing is then you're thinking that you are somebody to be somebody.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Even to be nobody. You know, it's like that one devotee who said to Prabhupada, oh, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen, I'm, you know, the most sinful, I'm, and Prabhupada just looked at him and said, you're not the most anything.
No.
But what I'm saying is don't let a sense of humility that's not actually representative of the ideal humility block our ability to actually be part of the process. Does that make sense? In other words, you can't say, oh, I'm so sinful, I can't be part of that process. Because the material energy is an illusion. So it's not real anyway, it's like a dream. You can say, oh, I'm so absorbed in this dream, I can't be involved in reality. But the dream is a dream. Or because I had this dream, no, all you have to do is wake up and you're part of reality. So every soul by nature is part of the Lord's pastimes. So then it's just a matter of where we fit into it. And so then that's the aspect we reflect. Therefore, the example is Chaito Darpana Marjana. It's a mirror. Because then you can see yourself, you can see others, because then you're reflecting what's there. We don't say it's our qualities. We say it's... It means someone is saying, oh, you have these nice qualities. So they are manifest in you. But we understand that the individual understands that those are reflected from whatever source they've gotten them from. So their spiritual master, the other devotees, by Krishna's mercy. Alright? So, therefore, that element of... that's why humility is so important. Otherwise, one can't take the position as servant of Krishna. One will have to try to be the Lord. So that is real knowledge. So understanding I'm servant of Krishna, that's your actual sambandha jnana. You can only have that if there's humility. Does that make sense? That's the basis of it. Then it starts to work. So that's why these qualities are so important. That's why Rupa Goswami is the prominent acharya, because he works with qualities. Right? So it's by those qualities, then one can actually perform devotional service. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
No, you don't have to.
Rupa Goswami is an example. He's a perfect mirror, reflecting the qualities of Krishna. So he's still a mirror. He's still reflection, or is he get the point that he is?
See, we give him the credit that he has those qualities because he is manifesting those qualities. But if you ask him, he'll say where he got some from. So we always see these qualities in others as they have those qualities. But within ourselves, the quality is there, but it's not ours.
Yeah.
That way then, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, is that he has this one essay where he talks off. He's talking about himself on Vyas Puja Day by a third party observer. You know, it's like, you know, who is this brute sitting here, you know, listening to his praises and all these different things? You know, how uncultured, how uncivilized, you know, how can he do this? Because the point is he knows the qualities are coming from somewhere else, but it's not that in the reflection, it's not there. If I bring a mirror and you can see that pillar, then to say that pillar isn't there, that would be illusion. It is there. So that point is the qualities that we attribute to the devotee are there. Where they're coming from, that's another discussion. But to say, oh, they're not there, they can't be there, oh, how can he be? I knew him when he was a devotee, when he first joined, I made him a devotee, he was like this, he was, then what is the meaning? So that means the holy name has no potency, the process doesn't work, you know what I'm saying? So therefore, those qualities are there, and the devotee is manifesting them, but they're a reflection of something else. So the mirror is given it as an example. It's not that everybody's like 2D and walks around and is very shiny, you know, like that. You know, and Rupa Goswami is just more highly polished. That's why, ooh, wow, check out his shine. You know, that's why. Yeah, he's the must be the boss. You know, something like that. And the ones who are covered with cow dung, that's, you know, the ones that are less.
And then eventually it becomes seamless when you enter pastime.
Seamless means.
In
you use Velcro or something?
It's so much discerning of Krishna that it's just as perfect as you're serving Krishna in the pastimes. So there is even not even a concept as I just as serving Krishna, but in whichever, you know.
No, there is the concept that you're the servant, but in the dynamic element of that, then there'll be some other thing. Like you see Radharani in her prayers, she just sees herself as a particle of dust at Krishna's lotus feet, just wants to serve. But in the active pastimes, then she's taking the natural role, so she might even be chastising Krishna or telling Krishna to do things.
Yeah, but it becomes selfish.
Selfless, yeah, that would be the better word.
Sorry.
Selfless, yeah. Yeah,
so that's it.
No. Means that's the whole point is that all these different concepts are all there simultaneously. But what is prominent, that's what's important. So for getting oneself out of the material world, then the element of never forget Krishna is your prominent. For getting yourself into the spiritual world, then it's always remember Krishna. So the devotee does both of these, but you have to know the difference. You know, just like sometimes it will be set around as, you know, the certain. I've heard persons who don't really like any devotee that they know being in a spiritual leadership position. They feel only Prabhupada can do that and everybody else is basically a schmutz like that. So then they'll run off this list of qualifications necessary for being in that position, being a guru. He must, you know, be a nitya siddha. He must be, you know, perfect. He must be a pure devotee. He must be free from all material contamination. But right there, he's just gone from a prema bhakti. He's mentioned the bhava bhakta. He's mentioned the madhyama devotee. And in some cases, that can even apply to a kanista. As soon as you say pure devotee, that starts at madhyama, right? When you say free from all material contamination or liberated, that simply means bhava. Or you say perfect, that means bhava. It doesn't mean prema. Prema is in another category, right? So they've given all these three lists of levels that somebody who is an obvious preacher and therefore is qualified for it, they've just listed the qualification, but they don't know the difference because they're not educated enough. Right? So we must be able to tell the difference between all these aspects, one for our own advantage so we can move ourselves forward, and the other is so that we can help others move forward. Right? Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. Then, okay. Okay, begin anew, says the critic, because the old masonry does not answer at present. Let the old author be buried because his time is gone. Right? In other words, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 500,000 years ago. Heard that? Right? So, this is the critic. Begin anew, because his thing is this. Okay, well, he'll take it. Okay. These are shallow expressions. Progress certainly is the law of nature, and therefore must be, and there must be corrections and development with the progress of time. It means, in other words, everything is moving forward because you have the element, at least here, of time. So time is movement. So that means things are moving forward. So then, in its movement, you have to make corrections. Like you want to go to the temple, you're going to start going this way. It's south. The temple is not south. I don't want to disappoint you. But the temple is basically, you could say, west-southwest from here. But when you leave this place, you're going to start going south. Right? And then you're going to go towards the temple, and then you're going to leave and go again for a long way south. Then you're going to go west, which is still going to miss the temple. And then, you know, slowly, slowly you get there. Because you're making the corrections, and then you're getting yourself to the place. Right? So he's pointing out is that corrections must be made. So the problem is not that it's in the wrong position. The problem is are you progressively moving towards the goal? That's the actual judgment. So one who says, if it's wrong, it's useless, throw it out, start all over, this critic is actually an enemy. And the one who says, okay, you're in the position, now do this to make it go forward, that's a real critic. Right? But progress means going further or rising higher. Now, if we are to follow our foolish critic, we are to go back to our former terminus. And another of critic of his stamp will cry out, begin anew because the wrong road has been taken. Right? I mean, in other words, you're here. Their idea is you have to go back to zero and then start all over again. The progress has been made. It's just slight in the wrong. So then take from there and go from there. Right? You don't have to go back to the previous term. You start with where you are now and then move. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the idea, is that he's saying, it's anyone says, okay, this is it, finish, throw the whole thing out, start all over again. Like that. We don't get anywhere. Now is 2008, and we have been having, let's say just as an example, master plans or temple designs since, you know, I think the early 70s. And why isn't there a finished one? Because when the new man comes in, he follows this thing of the critic here, where you throw it all out, start from scratch. And then there's nothing. So this is an example of this kind of thinking that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about? Is there just throwing it out? You take something that's there, take the concepts that are useful, that are progressive, keep those, leave the ones that aren't, move forward. But to throw everything out means people have done years of research, years of work, and then to throw it all out? Yes.
What about if totality, the foundation is strong? Like, I have an example, like in our country, they were building a temple, and the foundation was very weak. So when they built to some certain level, some part of the building fell.
Yeah, so then you build other things that are down, that are going to strengthen the foundation or put in some extra pillars and then go up. Otherwise, that will cost you something to build in some other strengthening things, but that's much less than ripping the whole building down and then starting from scratch.
Like the samadhi.
Yeah, like the samadhi. If there's some problem with the dome, then you put in extra columns. You break holes in the floor, build extra foundations, build up. That will be much better than ripping the whole thing down and starting all over. Does that make sense? That's the point. Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur means we'll get to it. He says it all very nicely. In this way, our stupid critics will... Okay, so we're not the only one who uses this word. Stupid, right? Our stupid critics will never allow us to go over the whole road and see what is in the other terminus. Because as soon as you make a little... Oh, you forget it. Start all over again. So he won't let you travel the whole road. It just won't happen. It's like the Mauritian frogs. Like that. Thus the shallow critic and the fruitless reader are the two great enemies of progress. We must shun them. Right? The true critic, on the other hand, advises us to preserve what we have already obtained. It means what you've obtained, not what's the loss. Right? In other words, the roof going to cave in, that's the loss. But the walls are still standing, so that's the gain. So now you just have to add something that will keep the roof up. Like that. Like that. Advises us to preserve what we've already obtained and to adjust our race from that point where we have arrived in the heat of our progress. Right? In other words, where we've gone... And, you know, in performing our activities, if it's gone off a little bit, then from that point, then straighten it out. You don't have to go back and start all over again. He will never advise us to go back to the point whence we started, as he fully knows that in that case there will be a fruitless loss of our valuable time and labor. He will direct the adjustment of the angle of the race at the point where we are. This is also the characteristic of the useful student. He will read an old author and will find out his exact position in the progress of thought. In other words, what is there of value, he will find that. Right? He'll use that. Everything else you can leave. But what is useful, that is then kept. He will never propose to burn the book on the ground that it contains thoughts, which are useless. No thought is useless. Thoughts are means by which we attain our objects. The reader who denounces a bad thought does not know that a bad road is even capable of improvement and conversion into a good one. Right? It's easier to fix a bad road than to construct a whole new one. Yes?
So if I understand correctly, if I have spoken Bhagavatam, which says that you have to practice bhakti and you have to give up everything, and then
yes,
because I'm wrong critic, then I say, oh, this is not correct, because now there is who can give up everything. But if I'm good critic, then I say, okay, I cannot give up everything, but I definitely have to give up something which is not favorable, good to bhakti, which is another principle you mentioned.
Yes, you could say like that, but it's also is that we're trying to be progressive to the point, because if you give up something, is that your goal? Or is that your method? What's your goal? Okay. And one of the symptoms of someone who has that is akinchana gochara. Means he has nothing. So, therefore, that verse from Bhagavatam says you have to give up everything. So, you're saying that that's not very practical as a process. But is it practical as a goal?
Yes.
Okay, so therefore it's your goal, your process will you be you give up as you can, when you can, in a progressive rate. You have to be, that's why we study this process, that means relationship, process, and goal, so you understand the difference. Right? So that's what he's talking about here, is that a thought has something it's trying to get somewhere. It may not be an ultimate goal, but it gets one somewhere. Right? Okay. Be nice. Be good. Turn the other cheek. You can say, well, that's useless because it won't get you bhakti. It itself won't, but it can put you in a position where then one is humble and all that. And from that position, then one can chant properly. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, it's not thrown out. It's just used as where it fits. Krishna says there's only one road. So if somebody has an understanding of part of the road, we don't throw it out. And say, only if you look at it like this, then it's there. But if someone only has this much, throw that out. And then we'll do this, because this contains that anyway. Right? The big contains the small, so the small is absorbed into the big. Does that make sense? Like that. Yes.
So it seems the difference between these two critics.
Speak loud.
The difference between the two critics, that the one which is going forward and finds that this is not the way, go back. So that's more actually like the ascending process. He doesn't know much the goal. He's trying it. He finds this is a mistake, and he doesn't know what to do. That's why he goes back. But the other one, he knows what the goal. He has the vision. So then he can make the adjustment, and then he can...
Yeah, good point. Could you hear that? No. He's saying is that the difference between the foolish critic and the true critic is the foolish critic doesn't know the goal. In reality, so he doesn't actually know how to get there. So then he is suggesting go back because he's trying to find himself and find some way to move forward. While the true critic, he actually knows the goal, so he knows where you're going. So whatever position you're in, he can progress you forward from that without going back, because he has no problem with his position.
It's like examples like cooking. Put much salt in the sabji, and the oil is inedible straight away. But if you know what to do, you can put some the potatoes and then absorb the salt, and it's edible, and it may be even nice.
Yeah. And then you throw away the potatoes.
They can stay.
Like that. Yeah, wow, what's this great potato sabji? No, it's actually a bean sabji. I haven't found one yet. Well, we did put a lot of too much salt. You know. Yes.
So, Maharaj, does that mean that you do anything other than Vaishnava Aparad is progressive for devotional service?
Anything other than Vaishnava Aparad is progressive for devotional service. Point is if you have if you have committed Vaishnava Aparad, then from that you can. If you can understand that it is Vaishnava Aparad and take the proper steps to beg forgiveness from that devotee, then it can also still be progressive for you. The point is if it's connected to Krishna, it's progressive. If it's not connected to Krishna, then it's not so progressive. So someone who knows how to connect things to Krishna knows how to take anything from anywhere and connect it to Krishna. And someone who doesn't, then they have a particular idea of what it should be, and it can only be that. You know, it's just like, okay, on Hari Nam, devotees go out, they wear their dhotis and saris, they don't look so good, so therefore, if we want people to accept this on Hari Nam, then, you know, devotees should go out in jeans and t-shirt. You know, like that. Rather than, I've never once heard the concept come up, why don't you teach the devotees how to dress properly? And if that's the point, teach him to dress properly. So coming up with this other conclusion then brings to mind that there may be two, means that they want to make, so the progressive thing here means the useful thought is they want to make the Hari Nam very presentable and very attractive to the public. That's good. But their method of doing it then is faulty in that, one, they themselves probably don't know how to dress, that's why they can't teach others how to dress, so therefore they have to come up with some other idea. Or two, they don't have faith that the Vaishnav dress is attractive. And so they want devotees to wear something that they think is attractive. You know what I'm saying? But the principle that they want to make the Hari Nam attractive to the public, that's a good idea. So therefore, if we start with that as an idea, then we say, you know, devotees will dress nicely, let's take out flags and festoons. You know, I used to see, I think it was, they used to do it in Paris, they dress up devotees as, you know, Gorni Tai or Radha and Krishna or different things, and it would make it very nice. So when they go out in these Hari Nams, they're very, very attractive. You know what I'm saying? So that principle that this person has had, they're presenting seemingly something quite bogus, but the core point why they're thinking about it is good. You know, unless their core point is to get devotees into Western clothes. But then their side point is great. You know, they're trying to, bolster their point by using something that seemingly is Krishna conscious. So that point's a good point. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the idea, is that you can take what is useful in the thing, keep that, and what's not useful, what's not progressive, then leave that, and from that position, move it forward based on the actual useful point. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So what the example of Lord Buddha,
who
discarded all the Vedas, and got him to start right from zero, essentially.
And what is that philosophy called? And but how do we categorize them in the way of, you know, personal, impersonal, theist, atheist? They're atheists. So is that progressive? You know what I'm saying? It's atheism.
Yeah.
So from that angle, then you wouldn't necessarily say it's progressive. From the other is that you look at it, what is the problem? The problem is people are killing animals in sacrifice. The problem is not the sacrifice. That the people want to do sacrifice, that's not a problem. The problem is that they're killing animals and those sacrifice for their own purposes. So it's not actually sacrifice. Because sacrifice means that you are voluntarily giving up something for someone else's benefit. Right? So therefore he's taking that desire to do sacrifice and taking that forward. So now learn what's real sacrifice, because you're killing the animals isn't going to be progressive for you. Therefore, you perform sacrifice that is ahimsa, that is not violent. So then they develop all the good qualities that one will gain from sacrifice. Once they have those qualities, they're non-violent, then you can reintroduce the Vedas. So in other words, they were seemingly followers of the Vedas, but technically they weren't, because they were using the Vedas for their own purpose, right? And what's the voidist? He's not using the scriptures, and his only purpose is his own benefit, right? By you becoming self-realized, you don't benefit anybody else. You know what I'm saying? Because the candle goes out. So how does a non-burning candle benefit other candles? You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, there's no benefit to it. So, technically speaking, then means it's the same mentality. They're supposedly following the Vedas, but they're doing a great disservice. So then progressive is not following the Vedas, if you think that's the application of sacrifice. So you show them sacrifice by being non-violent, since they can't understand that the Shastras talk about non-violent sacrifice, then you say forget the Veda. So that makes it progresses them forward, because they're not actual followers of the Vedic literature. It means as far as that, maybe they nicely follow the cooking and dressing and some of the cultural aspects, but their actual understanding of the process, the progressive process, is completely wrong. Right? Because those animals aren't benefited, so it's not sacrifice. Right? So it's misusing the whole system. So then he's taking it forward from there. You know, because you have to see what you're leaving and what you're keeping. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is you go into these old readers, and what's the actual thought? You know what I'm saying? Keep that. Does that make sense? Okay. Oh, we're done here. Okay. So we'll end here, and then we'll finish with Bhaktivinoda Thakur's statements. And then we'll go into the... On Monday, then we'll get into the actual Mimamsa, how it works, all the breakdowns and everything, the technical aspect.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki.
Jai. Jai.